Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. I'm your host, Luke. I got my friend Jesse filling in for Brian, who is out for this week. And you're listening to us on Devil Radio 92.7 FM here in Madison. We are broadcasting out of the Solidarity Realty Studios, also broadcasting out of Columbus, Wisconsin on WTTN 1580 AM, and our brand new Waukesha affiliates, the Shaw 101 FM in Waukesha and WAUK 540 AM out of Jackson, Wisconsin. So, Jesse, want to give a brief update here. We got a number that is not a fun number to report. A fourth consecutive day in a row, the state of Wisconsin has broken the previous record for confirmed cases of COVID-19. So as of today, broke pretty much right at the top of the show, so didn't have it ready then, but 12,293 confirmed cases of COVID-19 here in the state of Wisconsin over the last 24 hours. Unfortunately, that puts the seven-day rolling average now at 7,637 cases per day. It's more than double what the seven-day rolling average was just 2 weeks ago.
The proof's in the pudding, right? For anybody who isn't convinced about how bad this is, you just have to look at the empirical data, objective data. We live in an objective, shared reality here, so grow up and look at the numbers. I shared a post yesterday on my personal Facebook page. If anybody wants to hop onto that, I made it public too, so that you could follow it. There's a woman named Tammy Williams that I follow that lives down in Florida, and she aggregates data and puts it in really easy to understand charts to kind of really boil it down to what's going on. And then she throws in a cute cat picture too to make sure that people look at it. So
for the algorithm.
That's for the algorithm. That's right. And one chart that she likes to do is, okay, how many days does it take for each next million of reported positive cases? And you can look and just see on this, you know, it's even color-coded. It's really great. But even in like the worst spikes that we've seen in the past, getting to the next million cases has always been like 6 days or 4 days. I mean, I'm looking at it right now, and 4 days was the closest that we've had in the entire last 2 years up until about a month ago. And now it's
pretty much right. It coincides with
three,
when Omicron.
3, 2, 1, 1, 1, 1.
So we're reporting close to a million cases a day as a country. And
that's exactly right.
And yeah, and about a month ago is when we found out that the Omicron variant, which spreads way more rapidly.
And I get it. Everyone's exhausted.
And then you throw the holidays on top of that too. And it's, yeah, everybody is exhausted. It's exhausting trying not to catch this virus. I have been successful. I am double vaxxed. I am boosted. I wear my mask everywhere I possibly can. Yes, knock
ditto
on the
here,
wood.
Knocking on the wood.
The last thing I want to do is get this virus. And Brian was telling me today, it's not a joke. He's not feeling the greatest. And anybody
thinking
that downplays
it. Get better, buddy.
Yeah, Brian says that once he has the ability to and he has his energy back, he wants to kick the behind out of anybody that downplays this virus. Because it's not nothing. It's not a bad flu. It's not a bad case of the sniffles. It's a serious thing. And Wisconsin's health system is overwhelmed. Yesterday, the three largest hospitals in Madison announced that they are canceling all non-emergency procedures.
We've already
to the healthcare
been to that
system.
Place too, which
right.
is a horrible place to be. But where we are now, and I think we've been there earlier too. And this just go. I mean, that's a whole other thing about our privatized healthcare system. It used to be illegal, like, you know, a couple decades ago, for hospitals to be run for profit. Like that used to in living memory was not legal in the United States of America.
Yeah,
and when profit is the motive, you pare down extra inventory. And in that case would be capacity of hospital beds. So we've made our hospitals nice and profitable. And now when something like this happens, there's no place to go. So
well, and you also add on top of that the exodus that we're seeing healthcare workers I know
don't like
nurses,
being screamed at.
They don't want to be screamed at.
Being,
they're exhausted. 22 months into a pandemic, they're leaving their field, the calling that they thought that they would spend their entire careers in. They're leaving now because as a society, we're not doing what we need to do to
and
be
many
able
of
to
them
address
have
this
substantial
pandemic.
Student debt that
yeah,
still
that too.
that they've paid off not just the principal but the interest several times over, and gosh, it still is just sitting there like a monthly bill.
Yeah.
But they've done that, and now they're walking away because they just can't take it anymore.
Yeah, but I digress. So that is a snapshot of Wisconsin COVID numbers. Fourth consecutive day, we have set the record for new confirmed cases here in the state of Wisconsin, with just over 12,000 confirmed cases in the last 24 hours. Another headline I want to get to before we dive into the next story we want to talk about. Interim UW System President Tommy Thompson has sent in his letter of resignation to the UW Board of Regents today, Jesse. So
yeah, he was interim. Kind of expected that.
Yep, but it's, I still think it's an important step that's taking place with who's overseeing the UW system. We're about to come back from winter break. He will be in that role still until March 18th. But the UW Board of Regents committee that is expected to name the finalists for his position, that UW system president, is expected to meet and announce those today, I believe, or at least meet today. I don't know if that announcement's coming this afternoon.
What I think is really important in that process, and won't be done most likely, is getting input from students and faculty that is actually aggregated into the decision-making process, and not just like, oh yeah, we'll have some listening sessions or we'll take a poll, but something that is actually going to influence what direction or what that process looks like of finding a new president for the system.
Yeah. So, I agree. And it'll be interesting to see who the next UW system president will be. So,
you know what? I actually, it's funny because when I was in middle school, when I was a young lad, I was in eighth grade, and I was a part of a 4 or 6 student panel that we were asked by the school administration to interview several candidates for our new principal. And I was asked to be on that.
And you're like, yes.
I didn't volunteer. They're like, no.
Free pizza Fridays. I want soda in the milk machine.
We were getting down to some nuts and bolts questions about running
like
the school.
That sounds more like
you. The only person, he ended up being a fine principal later after I graduated that year and didn't, whatever. But but it was like the only person that we're like, not that guy. And that was the guy
that, that was who they picked. You guys had a lot of say in that.
Yeah, a lot of influence.
Committee.
I felt heard.
Yes, you absolutely. Well, you know who does feel heard? Tom from McFarland. Tom, what's on your mind today?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. You know, just to, I guess, be a bit of a Debbie Downer on Ron Johnson running, I think that we might be underestimating how this could actually go down. If you remember, we thought for sure Feingold was going to take him. And at the time, so did the Republican Party, and they just stopped funding Johnson. So he pretty much had to fund his campaign all on his own, which, of course, for somebody like Johnson is not too much of a big deal. But it does speak to how people had a tendency to write him off twice, I might add.
I hear that to a degree, but, I never thought that Feingold was ever a shoe-in for – he should be. He should have always been a shoe-in, right? I mean, he was a Democrat, but he was more budget hawky than most Republicans in the Senate, and he was really good at, managing the taxpayers' dollar. And, again, going back into Republicans, in this case, Republican voters not dealing in good faith – they didn't want somebody who was tried and true to be tight with their money. That he got elected or reelected, it was by a fraction of a hair.
But I think that we're going to see the same thing this time, only more so. With Johnson's statements on COVID, as ludicrous as they might be, we have to remember he is completely in lockstep with the majority of the Republican Party. The majority of Republican voters in the state 100% agree with where Johnson is at on COVID and think that is the path to go.
That I'm going to take some digression with. I do not believe that all Republican, and I don't even think that, I think it's a smaller fraction than most people think. I think there is a sizable, very palpable segment of people who self-identify and regularly vote as Republicans in this state who know that COVID's real, and increasingly, as we see more than 1 million cases a day in the country per day now, they're going to know people or have known people who have either been very sick or dead from COVID, and they're going to hear the ivermectin and leeches bit, and they're going to be like, I'm sorry, that does not fit with my personal human experience. And I do think that it's a sizable portion of Republicans that do think that they're just not as vocal about, you know, that vaccines are good and masks are good.
But then the other, those voters are going to vote Republican simply because of the fact Johnson's a Republican.
Oh yeah, those other ones will, sure. I think the COVID's enough to split a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tom. I don't think it'll be a cakewalk. I'm not saying that if Senator Johnson's running again that it's going to necessarily mean he's being defeated. I'm in a toss up of whether it's better that he stays or goes. I truly don't know one way or the other. But I think the interesting thing is there will be a lot of fuel that candidates and not third-party organizations and this station will be using of his own words to say that, you know, he's broken his word. He said he would only go for two terms. He is acting like it's the only decision he has, and he's got to do it. But I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic. I don't think it necessarily means that he's going to lose if he runs again. I just find it interesting that the Republican Party in the state of Wisconsin thinks that he's the best bet and only bet that could run to try to keep that seat in the Republicans' column.
I think not only is he definitely going to lose, but I think that we need to make sure that down ballot races get tied to their support for Rojo and the party so that we can hang this COVID idiocy around their necks like a piece of kryptonite.
I think that with the Republicans in the state, the reason why they think that he's the best to run isn't so much what they think, it's what Trump thinks. Ron Johnson is the Trump candidate, and that's where the Republicans in the party are going to go.
They're
going to
go
with who is it is the Trumper. And as far as your ammunition, make sure that you guys add in there where Ron Johnson spent the 4th of July, as in Moscow, and he still refuses to talk about what he consulted with Putin on the 4th of July during that meeting. So certainly add that in on the buffet, shall we say, of Ron Johnson choices.
And that's a fabulous question
for
members of the press to ask him anytime his face is in front of a microphone. What did you guys talk about, you and your buddy, Putin?
We appreciate your phone call, Tom. Yeah, that is an excellent question. I still see there's almost so many of them that you forget about some of the good ones like that. Like, why did you celebrate America's independence in Moscow? That is a good one, Tom. So I appreciate that submission. We've got a number of sound bites, I can guarantee you, that are going to be making their way back into our listeners' ears through this station for sure when it comes to the wild things that Senator Ron Johnson said over the last 6 years of this term. And that's the other point, I think, Tom. I do understand that he was underestimated in both 2010 and 2016. He's a different candidate. He's a different politician. He's completely different than when he was running those first two times.
I think he did irreparable harm to his brand.
And not even the brand thing, because it's fascinating. And again, in the Marquette polling, which is really the only polling outfit that does statewide polling here in Wisconsin, roughly like 25% of Wisconsin voters that get polled through the Marquette University poll, consistently 25% of them say that they need more information about Ron Johnson. So it's not just necessarily that he's going to be tied with some of these COVID things, because it seems like a lot of Wisconsinites just kind of tune him out for the most part. And they just don't have necessarily as good of an idea.
Give that man a microphone.
I mean, we've tried.
You guys did. In general, as a general principle.
Yeah, but I mean, there are just a lot of Wisconsin voters that, you know, kind of tune this stuff out, except for the big election years. And so it'll be really important in 2022 to share. I'm excited to share the library of Ron Johnson sound that we have. Because it's if there's that many undecided voters out there or need more information voters when it comes to Senator Ron Johnson, you can guarantee that Devil Radio 92.7 FM is going to give them the information they need to know to help make their decision when it comes to voting in 2022. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. I got my friend Jesse filling in for Brian. Got one more segment left of the day. Plenty of time for your phone calls. 844-967-2789.